Welcome to Bankless, where we explore the frontier of internet money and internet finance. But here today on Bankless, we are exploring some new frontiers. New frontiers in new technologies, all of which seem poised to completely revolutionize the world and change everything about the operating system that society is currently running. In fact, there are as many as five other technologies out there that are all accelerating in progress. And while each one of these new technologies are pioneering into their respective frontiers, they're also all beginning to converge with each other. And the intersections of these various frontiers are fertile grounds for massive disruption of the status quo. AI, longevity, synthetic biology, network states and coordinations, and zero-knowledge cryptography. Each of these are paradigm-changing technological frontiers, and each of these industries are in various stages of development and maturity. But, Bankless Nation, I'm here to tell you that each one of these frontier technologies is a tidal wave coming for society. The crypto wave hit society in 2021. Now society is learning how to deal with this nascent but powerful technology. And society is in the middle of being hit with the AI wave now in 2023, and that wave only appears to be growing in size. The waves of synthetic biology, longevity, network states, zero-knowledge cryptography, and other technology frontiers are still to come. This was the main subject of a two-month-long experiment called Zuzalu. Bankless viewers who are watching the background of my podcast shift in the last 2 months will notice I was gone from my Brooklyn apartment for 2 months. I was in Montenegro, of all places, at this thing called Zuzalu. Zuzalu was an experiment in a temporary community. The idea here is that we have crypto conferences or conferences in general, which are between 2 and 20,000 people for anywhere between 2 days to a week. And then there are hacker houses, which are 20 people for even as long as 1 year. Zuzalu was an experiment in a specific arena of both size of people, number of people, and lengths of stay. So Zuzalu was 200-ish people for 2 months of time. And then also about 600 more people that would come in for shorter term stays, like 1 to 2 weeks during specific themed weeks. Zuzalu is a brainchild of Vitalik Buterin, but it was really a holistic effort of many different individuals from across many different industries, and also individuals who were adept at community building itself. It was simultaneously a place for different frontier technologies to come together and discuss and collaborate and cross-pollinate, while also produce this experiment in what a temporary short-term community looks like. Something in the middle of a network state, a coordination, a digital nation that manifests physically in the world for 2 months at a time. So like I said, every single week at Zuzalu had a theme. Longevity week, synthetic biology week, new cities and network states, AI and crypto, public goods, zero-knowledge cryptography, digital tribes, and coordinations. The idea behind Zuzalu is that residents were staying there for the entire 8-week period, and us residents would watch hundreds of visitors cycle through to have their week-long sets of talks, panels, and workshops. While the visitors of Zuzalu were able to present their respective work and industry to people across vastly different other industries. The benefits of this are huge because some of these technologies have never really had a meaningful meeting place before. For many of the industry leaders here, Zuzalu was the first opportunity for them to meet their fellow industry professionals, but not just other professionals inside their own industry, but founders, researchers, and builders across other industries who can bring unique perspectives and knowledge to the table in order to cross-pollinate, spread knowledge beyond internal walls, and optimize for serendipity by just including new people from new industries. And then the community aspect of this made this especially unique. Because having cross-industry conferences is one thing, but this was a cross-industry two-month-long community. We lived together. We ate breakfast together. We all became friends. And that level of cross-pollination is just so much deeper and lasting than what a three-day or week-long conference could even bring. So Bankless Nation, this was Zuzalu. And here's what you can expect from Zuzalu content. My first conversation that you're going to hear is this one with Vitalik Buterin, which we will get to in just a second. And we'll talk about some of the philosophy and ideas and meaning and purpose behind Zuzalu. What it is, what he thinks it is, what it can be, what other people think it can be. Really the question of what is Zuzalu is embodied in the question itself. There is no answer. It's up to us. And eventually the idea is that Zuzalu spirals into a headless movement where maybe soon there is a Zuzalu near you. I recorded 18 different interviews at Zuzalu from all across the different industries that had representation there. These interviews range from 20 minutes to up to a full hour. These topics of conversations range from synthetic biology to AI to crypto in Africa to how to live forever to even conversations about Zuzalo itself, like this one. Some of these are very much crypto conversations. A lot of these are only crypto conversations if you use your imagination. So to understand the significance of each of these episodes, I want to share my biggest takeaway that I got from Zuzalo. And that's this. Ethereum and crypto is the eldest sibling of a bunch of frontier technologies. It's alone in this room waiting for its fellow siblings to grow up. AI is actually recently of age, so now crypto and AI are starting to be able to play together. Decentralized science will help longevity and synthetic biology come into the fold. The episode with Boris and Mikey will help illustrate that. Digital nations have a lot of work to do, and my episode with Primavera De Filippi will show you that way. Network states and new cities, there is an immense new need for competitiveness in governance over our physical countries and cities. When we get a bunch of new cities in the world, where are they going to find financial and governance tools ready out of the box? Well, Ethereum, of course. And my conversation with Nicholas will guide you through this world. So while crypto is currently going toe-to-toe with the old world of securities law and nation-state regulation, it is simultaneously stuck waiting for its future use cases across other frontier technologies to grow up and mature. But the biggest takeaway that I got, Bankless Nation, is that as all of these other frontier technologies grow up, and yes, crypto is not the only frontier technology that's up there, they are going to need Ethereum. They are going to need open, public, permissionless blockchain rails. They are going to need secure block space. The rapidity and speed of innovation and progress in the crypto space matches some of the innovation and speed and progress and just paradigm shifting technologies being built elsewhere. The frontier technical nature of all of these industries will bring them together. So meanwhile, here Ethereum sits alone, fighting with its parents, the nation state, the regulators, the old world, while its younger tech siblings are still too nascent to give it support. But Bankless Nation, I guarantee you that day will eventually come where each one of these technologies will impact your life. Zuzalo was a taste of the future. Everyone and everything at Zuzalo felt like they got beamed in from 20 years in the future to show the rest of Zuzalians how the future will look from their vantage point. The longevity people tell us of an inevitable future in which the option to live forever is a choice that you can make. The network state people show us a future of fluid human migration and citizenship across the globe. Synthetic biology people tell us about a future in which we can grow buildings and vehicles and materials out of organic material, and that material can self-repair and self-propagate. Everyone at Zuzalo was a futurist. And I would also add that everyone had a resigned note of optimism. Resigned specifically, though, as in everyone looked at the future and they see a paradigm-shifting technology that could improve the human condition at a very deep level. And then they also see these seemingly impossible obstacles that get in our way. Governments, dystopia, malicious use of the technology. No one in Zuzalo was naive about the trials that each individual industry faces. In fact, one of the main purposes of Zuzalo was to collaborate on how to get over these obstacles together. But no one at Zuzalo was a quitter. All the researchers, builders, and founders at Zuzalo, if they were given the one true ring, they would all take it to Mordor or die trying. So we're going to release these conversations over the next few weeks and months on the podcast and the YouTube. So treat these conversations at Zuzalo as a sort of choose your own adventure. So this is an opportunity for you to speed date other frontier technologies beyond crypto, because eventually all of these technologies will converge together on Ethereum. And that's what I see. Ethereum offers solutions, offers scaffolding, offers a place for other frontier technologies to collaborate and communicate and build upon. So this is why we're doing this. In every single episode of Bankless, we tell you this is how to get started, how to get better, and how to front run the opportunity. These Zuzalo conversations are how to get started with other frontier technologies, technologies that are on a collision course with society. If you listen to these conversations and understand their implications, you'll be ready. And you won't be surprised when these tidal waves of technological innovations start colliding with the world that we live in. If you want to learn more and just experience more at Zuzalo, in front of every single theme of an episode, whether it's an episode about network states or AI, I will give you the taste of Zuzalo during that week. What was it like? What was Zuzalo like during AI week? Because Zuzalo was different during AI week than when it was synthetic biology week or network state week. Each community, each set of founders and builders and researchers kind of brought their own vibe. And also the community of Zuzalo also progress and develop. So Zuzalu itself, as a digital nation that manifested for 2 months, is also part of this frontier technology. So if you are interested in explicitly learning more about Zuzalu, they will be contained in the intros to every single episode. So to kick off this Zuzalu content, we're going to start with our conversation with Vitalik Buterin. But first, I want to talk about these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible.
Kraken Pro has easily become the best crypto trading platform in the industry. The place I use to check the charts and the crypto prices, even when I'm not looking to place a trade. On Kraken Pro, you'll have access to advanced charting tools, real-time market data, and lightning-fast trade execution, all inside their spiffy new modular interface. Kraken's new customizable modular layout lets you tailor your trading experience to suit your needs. Pick and choose your favorite modules and place them anywhere you want in your screen. With Kraken Pro, you have that power. Whether you are a seasoned pro or just starting out, join thousands of traders who trust Kraken Pro for their crypto trading needs. Visit pro.kraken.com to get started today.
You know Uniswap. It's the world's largest decentralized exchange with over $1.4 trillion in trading volume. You know this because we talk about it endlessly on Bankless. It's Uniswap, but Uniswap is becoming so much more. Uniswap Labs just released the Uniswap mobile wallet for iOS, the newest, easiest way to trade tokens on the go. With the Uniswap wallet, you can easily create or import a new wallet, buy crypto on any available exchange with your debit card with extremely low fiat on-ramp fees, and you can seamlessly swap on Mainnet, Polygon, Arbitrum, and Optimism. On the Uniswap mobile wallet, you can store and display your beautiful NFTs, and you can also explore Web3 with the in-app search features, market leaderboards, and price charts, or use Wallet Connect to connect to any Web3 application. So you can now go directly to DeFi with the Uniswap mobile wallet. Safe, simple custody from the most trusted team in DeFi. Download the Uniswap wallet today on iOS. There's a link in the show notes.
MetaMask has something new. Introducing MetaMask Portfolio. MetaMask Portfolio is the best way to view your crypto portfolio from a holistic level. See everything across all the chains all at once. In your portfolio, MetaMask will report the aggregate value of all the assets in your MetaMask wallets, and even the other wallets you import too. But MetaMask Portfolio isn't just a passive portfolio viewer. It is a place to do all of the money verbs that make DeFi so powerful. You can buy, swap, bridge, and stake your crypto assets. So not only is MetaMask the easiest place to see your wallets in aggregate, but it's also a powerful battle station for all of your DeFi moves. So go check out your MetaMask portfolio, because it's waiting for you to open it up. Check it out at portfolio.metamask.io.
Arbitrum One is pioneering the world of secure Ethereum scalability and is continuing to accelerate the Web3 landscape. Hundreds of projects have already deployed on Arbitrum One, producing flourishing DeFi and NFT ecosystems. With the recent addition of Arbitrum Nova, gaming and social dApps like Reddit are also now calling Arbitrum home. Both Arbitrum One and Nova leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum and provide a builder experience that's intuitive, familiar, and fully EVM compatible. On Arbitrum, both builders and users will experience faster transaction speeds with significantly lower gas fees. With Arbitrum's recent migration to Arbitrum Nitro, it's also now 10 times faster than before. Visit arbitrum.io, where you can join the community, dive into the developer docs, bridge your assets, and start building your first dApp. With Arbitrum, experience Web3 development the way it was meant to be. Secure, fast, cheap, and friction-free.
Bankless Nation, it is the very final day of Zuzalu. As we speak, people are packing up their apartments, their hotel rooms, and getting in their planes to go home. And it has been a long 2 months. Vitalik, we'll start this interview at the end, because it is the end of this journey of trying to figure out what Zuzalu is. Do you feel like that you have come to an answer as to what Zuzalu is?
In some ways, yes. In some ways, no. I think... The yes part is basically, like, what this particular thing is. It feels like we understand, you know, what it means to bring, you know, a few hundred people together for a few months from a couple of different communities and try to create interaction between people, you know, help people learn about each other's interesting stuff that they're doing. And just see, like, what kind of a community comes out of that. The thing that I think is still unclear is, like, sort of what lies in the future, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Hmm. When the original ideas of Zuzalu came to be, in your brain and in other people's brains about what this could be, like, was there any original intent? Like, what was the main goals before people actually arrived at this place that we now call Zuzalu?
So I'd been thinking about a lot of ideas in this space for a while before. So last year I read Balaji's book, The Network State, and I wrote my longest blog post ever. That was a review of it that just ended up being insanely long. Mm-hmm. I had also been thinking about like crypto cities and generally like more real world use cases of little blockchains and zero knowledge proofs. And so the blog post I wrote on crypto cities 2 years ago is like one example of that. But you know, I also had some other ideas that were since then. I feel like I'd been interested in the topics of decentralized governance, going beyond like what it means for blockchains, and trying to apply some of those ideas to other contexts, and just the question of I think I approached all of those issues from this frame of like what would actually be concretely valuable for people in the real world. At some point the idea came to me to basically, do an experiment and try all of those things at the same time. Mm-hmm. The way that I think about the experiment is, conferences have thousands of people and, they last for a week, right? And those already exist. Hacker houses last for a very long time, but they only have up to 10 and 20 people. Well, what about something that has 200 people, so more than a hacker house, and lasts for 2 months, so more than a conference, and it has both of those at the same time? And basically, bring people together from a couple of different communities with some medium level of organization, but realistically relying on people coming in to do most of the rest, and just see what actually comes out of that, right? Mm-hmm. Basically, instead of just the discussion about creating, new network states or new societies or towns or like any of these things being this kind of purely abstract thing where you have, blabbers counter blabbing each other's blabbing, we actually try this, live thing and we'll just get a huge amount of real world and data and understanding of like what it actually means in practice and go from there. Mm-hmm.
You said what comes out of that being this space of 200 people for 2 months.
Right.
Well, what do you think something like Zuzalu or something like Zuzalu, what are your emergent characteristics that can come out of this landscape of size and time of 200-ish people for 2 months of time? What's unique about that setup?
Mm-hmm. I think the time duration is important because, 1 week is a break from your life, 2 months is your life, right? And so just the kind of mentality that you have, it becomes totally different. And the kinds of things that you're willing to do become totally different. There's time to, actually make new connections and actually start, doing things with people that you did not just kind of know before and brought from outside. It's also large enough, the number of people is large enough that it's big enough to hold pretty big things with multiple sub-communities, right? We had cryptography lectures that brought in 30 people. We had discussions about AI that brought in, over 100 people. We had, some various different health-related events, exercise, food, biotracking, everything. Mm-hmm. We had cooking of different types. Chinese karaoke is, hiking trips. And in a group of 10, you're not going to get those things, right? In a group of 10, you're going to have one of those things. And I think one of the differences between a city and a family is a city has neighborhoods. And 200 is big enough that it actually had neighborhoods, which was fascinating, right? So you actually got to see some interactions between communities, got to kind of make some connections that did not exist before, make some progress on some Ethereum-related things, had a good chance to talk to various different privacy teams and scaling teams, and, talk to people working on social recovery and people working on privacy at the same time. So it's, there's just a lot of things that become possible, and it's interesting to see that, like, even at this scale, they those kinds of things already become possible. Mm-hmm.
Mm. So you've said that 200 people are here at Zuzalu, but I think something like 800 or 900 have actually come through Zuzalu over the 2 months.
Right.
And in addition to the different, like, neighborhoods that you've called them, like, you have the longevity people and the ZK people and the Ethereum people. There was, and so, like, that has created some sort of emergent cross-pollination. But there's also, like, from my experience from the last 2 months, there seems to be, even though it was just 2 months, seasons of Zuzalu, seasons that came and go, because weeks had themes, and different people came to populate what was Zuzalu at a different time. What do you think was the benefit or net product of this dynamic of Zuzalu? 200 people here at one given point, but 800 people over the 8 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, I think there were kind of two motivations there. One was just, you know, if people only wanted to come and, like, experience, like, a little bit because they did not have more time, then, like, they would be able to come in. And then the concept of these, you know, theme weeks or theme seasons was basically sort of encouraged so that people who only had a limited amount of time and were interested in one topic area could come in for, like, the exact time that their topic area was the big thing. So I'd say, yeah, like, those aspects succeeded, but, like, there's also aspects of that that probably, did not go over very well, right? Like, one example of this was, especially in the Free Cities and Network States events, there was, like, definitely a large disparity that you could feel between, like, the kinds of, things that people coming in from the outside cared about and the kinds of things that people at Zuzalu cared about.
The tribes did not mesh.
Yeah, there's, like, I think, the tribes could have meshed better if a lot more effort was put into it. And, I don't think people quite kind of understood going in what kind of effort was required. Another issue is that, like, theme weeks are not actually good for learning, right? Like, in college, there's a reason why courses are, like, in parallel and not in series, right? And, like, you know, spaced repetition is the best form of learning, and there's a good reason why it's, you know, it just, like, we, like, our brains are just wired in such a way that we remember things much better if we repeatedly get exposed to them over a longer period of time. Mm-hmm. And instead, people just got this, like, crazy introduction to synthetic biology, like, big overload, and then no more synthetic biology. Then people got exposed to, like, a crazy overload of cryptography, and then no more cryptography. Like, the word Nova got spoken, like, you know, every minute for a week, and then, like,
I haven't heard it since.
Exactly, right? So, I think, like, that was one of those things that I think works less well. Like, in some ways, I think the biggest successes of Zuzalu might have even been the persistent themes. Mm. Like, the development of ZooPass, for example, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think that was actually, like, a really great kind of, like, technology sort of, you know, community fit there. Because, like, for ZooPass, it was, for Zuzalu, it was an application that, like, got actually used to do some really cool stuff. And then for ZooPass, it was a, you know, a community of real users that were actually, like, able to give feedback on a whole bunch of different edge cases. Mm-hmm. And, like, actually help, you know, ZooPass improve in a way that it would not be able to on its own. Mm-hmm. So, the, like, I think if I were to, like, redo something like this, like, I would try to focus more on persistent themes and even, like, having goals across those themes rather than just, you know, lots of things coming and going.
Mm. And for people who want to know what ZooPass is kind of like, it's a passport. Except for Zuzalu, 2-month-long passport that works inside of this community.
Right.
But it is now, like, infrastructure that future Zuzalus or future other temporary communities can also use. So it was like this top, is this dynamic passport that could change, but then also you could collect stamps.
Right. So okay. So the interesting thing about it, I think, just, you know, make it clear to viewers that this is not the same as a COVID vaccine card,
right, yeah.
Is that is the zero-knowledge aspect, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, here, if I can take out my ZooPass right now, hold on, I have to switch over to my other profile on Graphene, and then I open up the Zuzalu passport thing on my browser, and I get this, right? It's basically, it's a QR code, and that QR code contains a zero knowledge proof, like just a, you know, standard snark. I forget if it's Groth or Plonk or whatever, which proves that I am a member of the set of Zuzulu residents without revealing which one I am. Mm-hmm. And so, like, a bunch of interesting apps were built on this. So there was Zoo Poll, which basically had, like, polls where only Zuzulu residents could vote, but the votes were anonymous.
And only vote once.
Yes, and only vote once. And then ZooCast, which was a Twitter where all the accounts were numbered accounts, and only if you were a Zuzulu resident, so you could only get one numbered account. Mm-hmm. So, like, a lot of really fun online stuff happened. I mean, they're used for just, like, physical gatekeeping for an event when capacity got limited as well. And then there's stamps, which are the ZooPass equivalent of Popes. So, like, I was a cook for one of the community dinners, and I got a Pope saying that I'm a cook. What else?
You'll be getting one for being on the Bankless podcast here at Suzano as well.
Indeed, perfect. There's like a bunch of, nice popes that have been going around, and I've only seen some of them.
The next thing I was hoping to ask about is there's all of these different... Mm-hmm. Fields of thought, fields of study that came to be at Zuzulu. And interestingly, like, I wouldn't really call this an Ethereum-focused event. There were many, many Ethereum people here. But like you said, there were synthetic biology people. There was longevity people, network state people, AI people, public goods people, which were very much Ethereum people, ZK people who were very much Ethereum people.
Right.
But I wouldn't really call it an Ethereum event. What kind of thought went into the selection process of, like, what kind of topics were going to be here at Zuzulu?
Yeah. So I think there is definitely, like, an intentional motivation on my part to, like, have this also, you know, remind Ethereum people that there is a bigger role that they can be part of. So I personally, like, I knew some Ethereum and ZK people, and I knew some longevity people, and I knew some FreeCD and network state people, but then, like, lots of other topics just emerged organically on their own, right? Like, the AI group just kind of emerged by itself. The whole even synthetic biology, like, I did not really appreciate synthetic biology as a field. Like, I don't think I had even seen that combination of words together before, and then people just came to me and they're like, yo dog, we, like, literally made a brick out of carbon dioxide, and, like, we made a sweater out of carbon dioxide made by algae, do you want one? And I'm like, sure. And so that was really fun. But I think just kind of go back to the question of selection. This was obviously, like, a round one experiment, and, like, I think we all knew from the start that, like, everything would be very imperfect in a whole bunch of ways. So there was, I think, an intentional desire to just, like, say, we'll pick a couple of different communities and we'll, like, pick some great people from those communities. And, out of those, whoever's willing to come and actually stay for 2 months, like, you know, great. We'll have them and see what happens. So we followed this kind of approach of inviting the inviters. Like, we invited about 10 people, and then each of those started forwarding the invitations along to some others, and that kind of seeded the initial community.
So while I said this didn't really feel like an Ethereum event, the undertones of this whole thing was very Ethereum. The residents that stayed for 2 months were disproportionately, like, crypto people. To say that, like, first there was Synthetic Biology Week, and then there was Longevity Week, and then it was AI Week, kind of doesn't do the service of talking about all the cross-pollination that happened.
Right.
Can you talk about, like, what happened from your experiences, the cross-pollination and the value that came out of having all of these different communities kind of churn together?
It felt like, I mean, there's definitely, like, a lot of love between synthetic biology and Ethereum people at the beginning. Like, there was this strong desire to see that there were aligned values between the communities. And it's good to, I don't feel like anything substantive has quite come out of that yet, but, like, it could, right? I think one of the challenges is always, like, converting this kind of, like, vibe level alignment into substantive alignment. And I think in a lot of cases, the answer there is just the, like, the public goods funding aspect. Like, there are a lot of tracks here where people talked about retro public goods funding, impact certificates, quadratic funding, collusion-resistant quadratic voting, like all of these public goods funding ideas. And a lot of those are relevant to like any branch of science, right? So like I know Juan Bennett from IPFS and Filecoin, he's been for years like a very good bridge between the crypto and science communities. And but there's an increasingly growing decentralized science community, which is great, and hopefully more things come out of that. There were some interesting connections that got made between some of the longevity people and some of the Nick City people. It seemed like there's this kind of growing friendship between like some Vita Dow people and Prospera, and we'll see whether or not there's more bio stuff happening in Latin America soon. Mm-hmm.
One experience I had while all of these different seasons kind of came and go was learning that every single one, regardless of what it was, the longevity people, the network state people, the AI people, the ZK people, there's all a very like practical and understood way that that connects to Ethereum. Mm-hmm. Every single one has like, oh, this is the way that these two industries could build together. Mm-hmm. And in this current moment in crypto, we are once again in a bear market, and in bear markets, we tend to soul search. Yet again, our meme coins dominating the Twitter zeitgeist of the moment, which has left a lot of the long-term believers once again frustrated that this is what this industry is, at least at the cursory level, the top-down level. And so the learning moment that I've had, that I'm wondering if you have felt anything similar, is that Ethereum seems to be, and crypto at large, I think is like the eldest of a bunch of frontier technologies that has grown up first. AI, I think, is now also coming of age. But when we talk about like network states, where are all of these new charter cities or new network states or new coordinations? Where are they going to get their Wall Street? Where are they going to get their financial infrastructure? It's going to be crypto. Decentralized science. Like Ethereum offers a foundation for this industry. Same thing with synthetic biology and all of these emergent new technologies. They all seem to be a very good hook into Ethereum. And so my one of the biggest takeaways that I've had from Zuzalu for me personally is just like Ethereum and crypto at large seems to be the eldest of many siblings technologies, and it's just looking around waiting for all the other ones to grow up. I'm wondering if you have any reflections on that conclusion.
I think there's definitely something to that. And I think it's important to remember that I think like Ethereum and crypto, like they're always this combination of a technological movement and a cultural movement. It's also the kind of the ideological continuation of the cypherpunk movement. It's Balaji likes talking about the international and the decentralized movement as a successor to the non-aligned movement. Open source software as a concept, like people from those communities often also find their way into crypto. There's like this set of ideological things that it's also inevitably ends up being beside. And I think to have successful collaboration, like I think you need like that idea level alignment and like that practical level alignment to exist at the same time. And I think a lot of the time it's like, or there's definitely a lot of cases where like you have one and not the other, or you have the other and not the first, but trying to find those opportunities where both exist is really important and really valuable when it succeeds.
Zuzalu, I would kind of bisect between there's the knowledge side of Zuzalu. There's like the tracks that we've been talking about, but then also like Zuzalu, like you said, two months is your life, and so like there's a social life side of things. And so I'm wondering what do you think for you personally? Everyone got to experience Zuzalu, their life at Zuzalu, how Zuzalu would change their life for their own, because it was a choose your own adventure for what you wanted to make out of Zuzalu. How did the social milieu and what Zuzalu is, how did that what did you really get out of that personally?
And it's hard for me to compare because this is like literally the first time I've been with a large group of people for an extended duration, basically since university, mm-hmm. right? Like I've been nomading for literally, I think 10 years minus 10 days now. Mm-hmm. And like pre-COVID averaging, 55 flights a year, post-COVID a bit less, but still a bunch. And like even during COVID, like I was stuck in one place for longer periods of time, but I was not really with people. So it's like different and nice, and it's kind of hard to compare to other things. Mm-hmm. I think the value that I think like a lot of people got is like just having this like very high density of value aligned people around them, and this perception that like they can just go out on the street and like if they bump into someone, there's a high probability that that person is interesting mm-hmm. to them. Yeah, so that's something that like people generally do not get in other places, and it's like the sort of thing that's missing in a lot of online communities. Like, I remember my own experience starting as a Bitcoin magazine person, right? And, I was just basically participating from the sidelines, I felt, because I was just writing Bitcoin magazine from the internet. And then I went to Bitcoin Miami in 2013, and that's when I realized, how big the community is and how much, it's an actual community that's, really actually capable of doing all of those things. Mm-hmm. And, that really impressed me and gave me a lot of motivation. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that's always important for those kinds of internet heavy spaces in general to have.
What were you able to achieve at Zuzalu that you wouldn't have been able to achieve without it?
I mean, I had a desire to understand the experience, and I feel like I have a lot more understanding than before, though it's understanding that's hard to compress into a few words. Mm-hmm. I hoped to learn some more about cryptography, and to some extent I have, understood how to actually use recursive SNARKs better than before, and I feel like I understand Nova better than before, but some amount of progress. Mm-hmm. Though I feel like if it were more structured, it probably could have been better for me, but also mm-hmm. like there's just lots of people that were like bugging me with requests the whole time. So like there's definitely just
that anything new though?
Yeah, it is not. I mean, to be fair, for the first month there was much less of that, and like I felt so happy. Mm. Mm. Yeah, just being able to go out and know that if someone walks up to me, the interaction will be pleasant and won't be a selfie request. Mm-hmm. Like that's special.
Right.
The second month of that act of like this definitely like started having more outside visitors and started to just like having more people here who are coming just because it's not the tourist season is starting and it's like nothing to do with Zuzalu, and like it sort of normalized a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking forward to disappearing a bit again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Many people are getting on flights today and tomorrow and are largely going to be out of Zuzalu. Mm-hmm. What are you going to miss the most about Zuzalu?
All of the friends I've made, definitely. Mm-hmm.
So Zuzalu is coming to an end, mm-hmm. but there's this desire for everyone to see more of it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any aspirations or ideas about what Zuzalu could become? What could Zuzalu be in its maxly manifested state?
Mm. I think it depends on what the goal is. I think Zuzalu, as it was this year, is this convergence point in that for a lot of possible journeys, it's this kind of first experimental step that makes sense as a first step on one of many different paths. But as each of those paths go forward, they diverge in some different ways, mm-hmm. right? So one example of this is if you want to build a longevity-focused network state where people do frontier bio research, then you need infrastructure, and that infrastructure realistically needs to be in one place. And even if infrastructure was not a problem, you'd still need to be in one place because it's hard enough to convince one country to adopt favorable regulations when And so, like, you know, getting a convincing a new country every 60 days is just totally unrealistic, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And but other people, on the other hand, like, actually want a digital nomad village, right? Other people want a similar experience, but for a different set of communities or with a somewhat different focus, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's just lots of spins of this that make a lot of sense, right? Like, one, there's even people in Montenegro that want a longer-term crypto city. Right, like one path is toward, you know, building some longer term settlement with a particular goal. One possible path is toward doing these, intensive boot camps with the goal of building something. Right, so we talked about ZooPass and, how this kind of served as, the boot camp for basically incubating ZooPass. Mm-hmm. And then the question is, what are other things that this could serve as a boot camp for? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know, secure operating systems, secure smart contract wallets, decentralized social media, I don't know, right? There, and then, like, that's all in the the world of bits, sort of tech land. There's, I'm sure, equally many examples, in the longevity and biospace, for example, or even just in terms of, like, cultural experimentation. Mm-hmm. Depending on like what the goal is, there's different paths that you could take, and I think my ideal goal is to find a way for all of the paths to be taken, and that might mean that the name Zuzalo is not going to represent any particular one of those paths, right? Mm-hmm. That's there's still this challenge of what is the role of the core team, does the core team split, do people take on different responsibilities, what is what kind of actually makes sense as an organization of this kind of ecosystem, especially as we have all of these different visions that then start going in different directions from here.
What do you want your role to be as Zuzalo develops into something bigger?
I mean, I hope that it doesn't depend on me, right? Because I think, anything that depends on me is not going to scale. And even before it fails to scale, it'll probably make me, go crazy from multiple interview requests every day.
So, like I said, we're at the last day of Zuzalo. Mm. People are packing up their bags. But yesterday, we had a community moment of reflection, and we all tried to come together to come to consensus about what are the values of Zuzalo? What does it mean to be a Zuzalian? So I'm wondering what your perspective is on that question. What does it mean to be a Zuzalian?
Maybe it's not my place to answer the question yet.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. How do you think that answer should come about?
I'd love to see lots of other people writing about what their answer is. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this isn't even modesty on my part. This is actual curiosity. I'm looking forward to actually reading and seeing what other people see as this as being and what kind of future they see it as driving towards. And I think there's going to be a lot of really valuable information in those answers too.
Mm-hmm. Well, Vitalik, thank you for being trusting enough of humanity to be able to cast off all of these things into the hands of humans that can do a variety of things to whatever is thrown their way. So I appreciate it.
And thank you, David, for continuing to steward the Bankless Nation. This is the West. This is the frontier. This is the absolute unknown. And you could lose all of your assets and all of your sanity. But for those of us who have been here, it is, and I expect will continue to be a wonderful journey. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Vitalik.
Introducing ETHX from Stater. ETHX is a liquid staking token designed to maximize rewards, all while securing Ethereum. With Stater, you can run an Ethereum node with just 4 ETH, which is 85% lower capital and 35% higher rewards versus solo staking. Stater has a multi-pool architecture with permissionless and permission node operators to enable decentralization and scalability. Stater has extensive experience in building liquid staking protocols on 6 proof-of-stake blockchains and is trusted by over 70,000 stakers. Stater has partnered with
with over 40 leading protocols to bring DeFi utility to their liquid staking tokens. Stator is actively building integrations across the Ethereum ecosystem to bring the same great DeFi utility to the EtherX token, with $1 million of SD token rewards in DeFi for ETHX users. All of Stator smart contracts are audited by at least 2 independent cybersecurity auditors and have multi-million dollar bug bounties currently live. So go to statorlabs.com/ETH to sign up and get access to the Stator staking protocol. Mantle, formerly known as BitDAO, is the first DAO-led Web3 ecosystem, all built on top of Mantle's first core product, the Mantle Network, a brand new high-performance Ethereum Layer 2 built using the OP stack, but uses EigenLayer's data availability solution instead of the expensive Ethereum Layer 1. Not only does this reduce Mantle Network's gas fees by 80%, but it also reduces gas fee volatility, providing a more stable foundation for Mantle's applications. The Mantle Treasury is one of the biggest DAO-owned treasuries, which is seeding an ecosystem of projects from all around the Web3 space for Mantle. Mantle already has sub-communities from around Web3 onboarded, like Game7 for Web3 gaming, and Bybit for TVL and liquidity and on-ramps. So if you want to build on the Mantle Network, Mantle is offering a grants program that provides milestone-based funding to promising projects that help expand, secure, and decentralize Mantle. If you want to get started working with the first DAO-led Layer 2 ecosystem, check out Mantle at mantle.xyz and follow them on Twitter at 0xmantle. Hiring people worldwide, paying them in crypto, providing them access to benefits, it all's so complex. But it doesn't have to be. Complying with labor laws, payroll rules, tax obligations, and crypto regulations in every country that you employ someone is difficult, time-consuming, manual, and costly. And it's drawing more and more attention from regulators and governments. But there is good news. Toku is here. Toku is the first employment and compensation platform for the crypto industry that makes this easy. Toku helps you hire employees or contractors and pay them in fiat or crypto legally, compliantly, and with all the taxes handled in over 100 different jurisdictions. So whether you're an early stage company with just a team of 2 or you're an enterprise with 200, Toku has a solution that meets your needs. Toku is already working with the leading companies in the space, Protocol Labs, Hedera, Gitcoin, and many more. So transform your employment and token payroll operations with Toku. You can reach out to Toku at toku.com/bankless or click the link in the show notes. If you haven't experienced the superpowers that a smart contract wallet gives you, check out Ambire. Ambire works with all the EVM chains that are out there, the layer twos like Arbitrum, Optimism, and Polygon, but also the non-Ethereum chains like Avalanche and Phantom. Because of the power of smart contract wallets, Ambire lets you pay for gas in stablecoins, meaning you'll never have to spend your precious ETH again. The web app has numerous fiat on-ramps to make it easy to dump your fiat for crypto. And if you like self-custody, but you still want training wheels, you can recover a lost Ambire wallet using an email and password, but without giving the Ambire team any control over your funds. Check it out at ambire.com for the web app experience. But also, the Ambire mobile wallet is coming soon for both iOS and Android. And if you want to be a beta tester, you can sign up at ambire.com/app. And since you stayed to the very end of this ad read, you should know that Ambire is airdropping its wallet token to early users for simply just using the wallet. So if you want to get started with Ambire, all the links that you need are in the show notes.